you are about to see the first public exhibition of an entirely new form of entertainment.
That belongs in a museum.
You are about to see the first public exhibition of an entirely new form of entertainment.
That belongs in a museum.
Hello, and welcome to SmurfCast, the show that celebrates the greatest comics format of all time, the Smurf Edition, proud member of the Fire and Smurf Podcast Network. I am your host, Rob Smurf, and joining us for this episode is fellow network all-Smurf, Brett Smurf. Hi, Brett. How are you doing?
I'm just Smurfy, Rob. Thanks for having me on the show. Yeah,
thank you so much for being here.
As smurfed up as things are in the world right now.
Things are very nice smurfed up in the world. Yeah, indeed.
It's so nice to just be able to just enjoy ourselves and talk about some Smurfy stuff.
Absolutely. So, okay, those of you who are listening to this, and it's probably just a few of you, have got to be wondering, he brings the show back intermittently ever since he ended it last year, and he brings it back for this? We're here to talk about the Smurfs treasury? Really? Why are we doing this? Well, okay, there is a method to my madness, everybody, because this book, the Smurfs, the one-off Smurfs treasury that Marvel published on July 1st, 1983, represents the last classic treasury edition that Marvel ever did. After they never did another treasury after this until the 2000s, where they brought them back in those one-offs of the Spidey, the Guardians of the Galaxy, the Women of Power, all one-offs. And while those are nice, and I have covered some of them on the show, they're more like almost like absolute editions in their own weird way. They're certainly out of the realm of the classic treasury edition. So, you know, this show was always sort of meant to be fun, but also chronicle the history of the format. And so attention must be paid to the Smurfs treasury because this is it. Marvel never did another one after this. And again, we'll get into the details of kind of the hows and whys of these stories in a moment. But Brett, I do want to ask you, you know, you and I are roughly around the same age. Do the Smurfs as a concept, have they ever figured into your life in any way?
Yeah, they actually have. So I'll try to keep it as short as possible. So my mother worked for WGAL, which was the NBC affiliate. Sorry, you might hear some children in the background. It was the NBC affiliate in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And she started there in about, I think, 1975, 1976, and worked there until about two. She retired in like 2000, 2001, something like that. So she was there a long time. And she was in the promotion department. She was a on-air news producer. She did writing. She did production. She did editing, stuff like that. So
pretty cool job.
Yeah, no, it was. And just as an aside, if you were familiar with the Anchorman movies,
sure,
and the sort of the stereotypes of those kind of guys, that hits very close to home because there, there were a lot of mustaches going on in WGL in the early years, but not in a bad way or anything like that. Just the way that they looked and everything. Anyway, so the Smurfs were on NBC and they were really big in the early 80s. And so we lived about 45 minutes or so from Hershey, Pennsylvania. And there's a theme park there called Hershey Park. For those who aren't familiar, the chocolate factory there in Hershey also had an amusement park, which is very, it's still there now and is very popular and everything. So the one day Hershey Park had a day specially for employees of WGAL. Again, it's a pretty big place, and it was like a Smurf day. So they had all these kind of like Smurf, events and stuff like that going on, and you still had all the rides of it. So it was just employees of WJL and their families there. So there weren't that many people there in relation to how it normally was. So it was cool. So you could go on all the rides all the time and everything. And they had people dressed up as Smurfs, like they would, like as Mickey Mouse or something like that at Disney, stuff like that. So one of the big things they had was they had these blue Smurf sundaes. So there was like blue Smurf ice cream and these huge sundaes. So I'm about when we went, so it was my mom, me, and I'm about 8 years old at the time. And my sister, who was a little older, so she's probably about 12 or 13, and she brought one of her friends. So we were there. So I had this giant blue Smurf Sunday, and then we went on the roll rides. We went on they have a roller coaster there called the Super Duper Looper. I think they still have it too. So obviously, as you can kind of tell from the name, it like loops around a bunch of times, the roller coaster and everything. So we could keep going on the rides because there weren't that many people there. And on the way home, we're driving home, we get about halfway home. And all of a sudden, I'm kind of like, I don't feel great. And I kind of look at my mom and I go to say something, and I just projectile vomit all over the front of the car. Because I'm in the passenger seat, and my sister is in the back seat with her friend, and she and her friend are like, "Oh my God!" And it just keeps coming. It
Was
just
it
keeps
blue? Was
coming.
it blue
Yes, it was
colored?
blue. That was
Oh,
the whole
that's
thing. It was
fantastic.
blue. So my mom's like, "Oh my God, what do I do? What do I do?" So she eventually has to pull over and at a gas station and hose me off, and they had to buy all this stuff so they could clean, like literally scoop out all the remnants of my Smurf Sunday. So that is probably my most prominent Smurf memory. But yeah, I had some of the, early on, I had some of the collectibles, the little they had the little tiny plastic Smurfs. They had every conceivable Smurf, if you know what I'm talking about. They had all the collectibles. So I had a bunch of those when I was a kid, and I watched the show and everything. So, it was huge. It was huge for a while. So,
It was a huge. Well, that's fantastic. I love that. I like the idea of your mom watching you vomit this blue stuff, and it's like, that's not a color found in nature. What is wrong with my boy? It's like, no, it's just from the coloring that I've had of the Smurfs. It's fine. It's okay. Well, that is fantastic. Now, do they figure it all in your kids' lives? Because I mean, they've done two animated movies in this century, and like they are still a thing.
They've done anime movies. They've done, and they had, I don't want to say live action, but they had them in sort of the real world, I guess, so to speak, with what's his name? Doogie Howser. What's his? I'm
Neil
drawing a
Patrick
blank on his
Harris.
name. Neil Patrick Harris. Thank you. They did two with him, and they've done some newer ones too. So I remember watching those with my kids, with my two older kids when they were younger. My youngest, who is now 9, was into him for a brief time. He had some of the little, they were making new collectibles and stuff like that. So he has some of those. So he enjoyed the movie. So yeah, they all know what the Smurfs are. So it's still around. I mean, and I think they're coming out with a new one again
Yeah, I think
pretty
they
soon
are.
or something like
Yep,
that.
yep, yep.
So yeah, it's still around. Everybody knows what the Smurfs are. Yeah.
Isn't that amazing,
What
right?
about you? I mean, did like I said, you're about the same age. Did you?
I watched the cartoon, the one that the reason that anyone kind of in America, by the way, okay, let's backtrack a little. I'm going to steal a page from fellow Network All-Star Paul Kien, who does these wonderful histories. He did them on Batman Family Reunion, and he's moved on to DC Special Cast, where he gives a little bit of a greater context featuring the artist. And I'm not going to get too deep into the Smurfs history, but there are a couple things I thought were funny. First of all, the Smurfs debuted in 1958. I had no idea they'd been around this long. They were the creation of this artist called Peyo, which is the pen name of Pierre Culliford. Now, obviously, Mr. Peyo, who has been deceased for about 30 years. I mean, obviously, once the Smurfs really took off, he obviously managed to hire a team of ghost artists that could mimic his style perfectly because the sheer amount of material being produced, there's no way that he was writing, drawing, and inking this many pages of material. There's just no way. So,
Oh, sure.
but I'll be damned if you could tell the difference, right? I mean, you can see the stuff and you're like, it looks like this. The Smurfs have a very particular style. And so it's like, all right, that's what they look like. But this was a creation of him. He was a Belgian comics artist. Fun detail, it says here the Smurfs wear Phrygian caps, which came to represent freedom during the modern era. So take that to
All right.
whatever that means exactly. But it was really the cartoon that debuted in America in 1981. It was a Saturday morning staple. It ran for 8 seasons. I didn't know. And I did watch it, not because I ever particularly liked the Smurfs. I never thought they had enough personality individually to be, kind of like, all right, whatever. But I'm sure it was on during the stretch where I was watching everything on Saturday morning, right? I mean, I would switch channels because it was like, all right, Super Friends is here. And then I'm going to watch Rubik the Amazing Cube over here, or whatever,
Oh my God.
but so I watch Smurfs just because it was part of my Saturday morning thing. But I was never really that big of a fan. I remembered classmates of mine had some of the figurines, but it was just never my thing. I was Star Wars. The Migos were still hanging on at that point, and other related things. But the Smurfs were never written. Just never really my jam. Now, obviously, Marvel was king of the licensors from the 70s and the 80s. And there was a Smurfs comic book in 1982 that ran for 3 issues. That, if you ever see it, Marvel did a couple of these very strange licensing. It wasn't like in the 70s, right, where they did Star Wars and Battlestar Galactica and the Shogun Warriors, where they put their house artists, on these books. A lot of times those characters, the Shogun Warriors or like Godzilla, crossed over into the Marvel Universe, or like Rom the Space Knight. In the 80s, Marvel would do these kind of weird license things where I can only imagine they got a chance to get the license for a song and just thought, well, let's try it. And so they did 3 issues of Smurfs with no, if you ever see these books, there's no cover copy on any of them. It just says Smurfs. Right. There's no kind of like Marvel House of Ideas way of like selling it. And they even did that similar something similar for Dennis the Menace. They published like 3 issues of Dennis the Menace in the 80s. And you're like, why are they what? Why are they doing Dennis the Menace? Like, why now? But there was a cartoon series. And so they published these 3 issues in 1982, and then they do this Treasury. And this Treasury is a reprint of all those stories. I never really knew that until I looked until we decided to do this. And I thought, that makes no sense that they would commission original stories because who's going to know? And I looked and saw, thanks to Mike's Amazing World, yes, all the stories that appeared in this 3-issue Smurf series are just reprinted here. And by this point, by the late 80s, Marvel was using the treasuries purely for licensing stuff. They had done the G.I. Joe treasury. They did the Annie treasury. The Star Wars ones were very popular. But by the time of the Smurfs thing, they were just selling these, presumably in like department stores. There was no way that a Smurfs treasury was going to, for $2, by the way, this thing retailed for $2.50. There was no way they were going to sell this in a comic store. Kids didn't. The nerds that went to comic stores didn't give a shit about the Smurfs. So,
Who's that guy? Who's got that kind of Smurf money in
yeah,
at
exactly.
that time, right?
It's not
Jeez.
greenbacks, they're bluebacks, presumably. So that was really what Marvel was trying to do, was, put an item in a department store where it could sit on the shelf for many, many months and maybe they turn a profit. And obviously, by this point, Marvel and DC were getting out of the Treasury business, the format itself. So this was obviously didn't sell too much because they never did another one after this. I mean, if you look at the cover, which you'll see on the gallery page on our website, like it says Marvel Books. It doesn't even say comics on the cover. And it's got a Smurf as the little cover corner thing. It's not even like Spider-Man or something. Like they're really, unless you looked hard, you wouldn't know this was a Marvel comic in any way.
Well, that's too
So
bad. I feel like they missed a chance. They could add like the Smurfs by Herb Trimpe or something like that. It's like
yeah, like a
fight the
team up,
Hulk or
right?
something like
Would have
that.
been
Yeah, team
great.
up with
Yeah,
the Hulk and
exactly.
Spider-Man or something.
We'll get Howard Chaykin in here to draw the Smurfs or something like that.
Look, can you imagine Howard Chaykin drawing
That
Smurfette,
would be deeply,
by
deeply problematic. Now, I do want to mention how I came to get this book, because I had decided a
way?
while ago I wanted to cover this because, again, for the sheer historical sake of it. So I go to my bookshelf where I keep all my treasuries, and they're organized. I have them all the DCs together and all the Marvels together, and I'm looking and I see no Smurfs comic. And I'm like, where the hell's the Smurfs comic? So I'm rifling through all my books. I'm like, did I misplace it? No, I can't find. And then I remembered that a couple of years ago, while I was in the middle of moving around, I was storing some of my stuff in my parents' basement, and they got water damage, and a bunch of my comics got waterlogged, and a bunch of some of the books were treasuries. And now, luckily, they were none of the DC and the Marvels, wasn't like Superman, Spider-Man, but a box of the kind of one-off treasuries got damaged, and I think the Smurfs was in there, and it just got thrown out. So I actually didn't have this book anymore, right? So now I'm like, well, I already told Brad I want to do this. So now I gotta, so okay, let's go online to the darker,
On the dark web to find the
the
Smurf
blue, the
treasures.
blue, bluer corners of the internet and find scans of the Smurfs treasury. As you might expect, no one's ever bothered to scan this book in on the internet. It doesn't exist anywhere. So now I'm like, okay, well, now I gotta buy another copy of this damn thing. So I go to eBay and I find it. And unfortunately, I guess because it's still a treasury and it's a 40-year-old comic and whatever, people are selling it on there for $60.
No.
Yes. And I am like, I'm not spending $60 for this damn book. And I'm like, all right, well, let me look. And then I kind of just put it off for a little. Then I find someone selling it for $12. And I'm
There
like, well, wait a minute. If everybody's selling it for 60, why are they selling it for 12? What's the problem?
you
And I go and I look, and this thing has been around the track a bit. It is, I would say, fair minus in terms of its condition. It's complete, it's not missing any pages, but this thing has definitely seen some better days. And I was like, well, all right. And so I bought the thing, and luckily no one else was bidding it. Thank God for Saturday afternoons. People were had better things to do with their time. So I went and got it, and like I said, it's got some water damage. It is, and because I don't have a scanner anymore, I had to literally take pictures of every page of this book with my camera and then text them over to Brett, which is why poor Brett had to work from some really, really bad quality scan. So I
I was
appreciate
gonna
you
say these,
persevering.
yeah, these scans look like you were like taking them from a spy camera, like it was Watergate or something like that. There's this huge shadow running across,
I
like
know.
like a spherical
I
shadow of it.
apologize. I
No, it was fine.
apologize.
It
They're
was
really,
fine.
really,
Everything was completely readable. It's not.
really
It
terrible.
doesn't get
And
too in depth. Yeah.
yeah, now the copy I have has a sticker on it from like a department store. So Gold Circle. I'm not familiar with Gold Circle, but obviously it said
No,
this
I'm not either.
sat in a department store somewhere and it probably got never got sold, and then it just sort of made its way over to me. So now I have the Smurfs treasury again. So there's that.
There's that silver or blue lining. Yeah.
There's the blue line. Yes,
Yeah.
there's the thin the blue lining of this. So again, we are not going to get into the in-depth plot synopses of these stories because for Pete's sakes, but we'll talk about it a little bit. So let's talk about the cover. You see here a bunch of the Smurfs, including the main one, who seems to be floating in the air. Did you notice that?
Yeah, sort of. I didn't know if he was like sort of leaping,
Yeah.
or what's going on. But yeah, he is sort of just like I assume he's sort of jumping in the air
I
because he kind of has
guess.
his arms sort of like flailed out a little bit. So I thought maybe he was just sort of jumping in the air. But I do like I want to say they do some nice depth with this because you can tell the Smurf in the foreground is definitely inked a little heavier than the background. So they
True.
do a nice job. He pops, he kind of pops out. And the art, the art's good. They're even doing some cross hatching in the back of the I'm sorry, I'll let you finish talking
No,
about it.
That's actually that was going to lead to what I was going to ask. I wanted to what do you think of the looking at this artwork at this size?
I think it looks really good. I mean, I think it's definitely something you would pick up for your kid. If you had a young kid, just be like, oh, here's a giant comic book with Smurfs in it. Here, read this. It's just nice and it's clean. Like I said, the foreground pops. It's just sort of fun. It's fairly colorful. I mean, it gets the point across. You got the Smurfs here. You got Gargamel in the background, ready to cause some trouble too, to show what the, see who the bad guy is. And I think it's good. I like it.
And yeah, there's Gargamel in the background. When one of the there's only one of the Smurfs seems to be noticing that he's there. He's turning around, like looking at Gargamel in the bushes. Like I mentioned about the regular size comic series, this is, I mean, obviously the subject matter is very un-Marvel like, but just the whole style. Like there's again, there's no cover copy, right? There's no attempt at Marvel kind of hyperbole, and that makes me think that this was something wholly produced overseas. Right, just completely done, and then they just literally got the, got copies of the files and printed it. It's just there is no, you would never know this is a Marvel comic book unless it didn't have their name on the upper left of the screen. That's it. There's no way to make this look like anything of it. Like you would think this is like a coloring book. It doesn't look like a Marvel treasure. At least the G.I. Joe comic looks like a Marvel comic. It's got their banner across it. The Annie comic has their banner across it. It's got a little indicia with Spider-Man on it. This was just clearly, hey, this is something we can, and the reason I'm assuming they probably got the rights very cheaply is I remembered the Dick Tracy Treasury, the one-off Dick Tracy Treasury that DC did, which is one of my all-time favorites. And I asked the answer man, Bob Rozakis, how he like, because if he knew, like, why did DC do this? Why did DC do a one-off Dick Tracy? And he didn't exactly know because he wasn't involved in that. But he said from his estimation, that's what it was, is that DC president Saul Harrison probably learned that he could get the rights to Dick Tracy for nothing. And it was like, well, it's worth trying. And it sold very poorly, so they never did it again. And I have to assume that that's what this was. It was like, hey, is there any interest in the Smurfs comic? No? Okay, well, we tried, and move on. But they were, other than probably translating the stuff into English, there was probably absolutely no work done by anybody in the Marvel bullpen on this at all. Like they just
No, I
packaged
doubt
it
it. I
and they
doubt
sent
it.
it out. There's nothing on the inside cover. They like it's really sort of as bare bones
There's no
as it
like
is.
title "When Enters Gargamel" or something
Right.
like that. There's nothing like that.
Exactly. So again, I feel almost I feel a little silly even talking about the stories, but what the hell? So the first one is called The Smurf of Youth. By the way, every single Smurf story is credited to Peyo, right? Regardless, in a very Bob Kane kind of way, right? That he did everything. He did everything. Okay. I mean, thoughts on the Smurf of Youth story, Brett?
It's well, it's pretty it doesn't paint Smurfette in the best light. But yeah, it's just a silly story about how she thinks she has
A
a
wrinkle.
wrinkle on her face or something like that, that she's getting older and she wants to find the fountain of youth, and they go through some Smurfy adventures, and then in the end it turns out there was a crack in her mirror
There you go.
that's gonna go. But they encounter Gargamel in this, of course. So the longer stories, there are a lot of like sort of one pagers that are kind of along lines almost of like Mad Magazine, stuff like that, where they have just kind of one page. The multi-page ones usually involve Gargamel and everything, and how they thwart him in some silly way. But yeah, it's fine. I will point out, so I did, you said you did some research on this. I did look up just a little bit about the Smurfs, and one thing that came up a few times was something called the Smurfette principle. Did you read anything about this?
No, I don't think I saw that part. What is that?
Okay, so it was developed in 1991 by a poet named Katha Pollitt, I think is her name. And it was basically described as a practice in media such as film and television to include only one woman in any otherwise entirely male ensemble. And it establishes a male-dominated narrative where the woman is the exception and exists only in reference to the men. And that was sort of what they kept saying about Smurfette, that she's just sort of there. I mean, I guess she was created by Gargamel. Originally to like basically cause infighting amongst the Smurfs. It's like psychological warfare.
Dudes are going to be dudes no matter what the setting is.
So she was supposed to be evil, and I guess she found her better angels and became one of became one of the gang. But yeah, so that was sort of the story behind Smurfette. So I wanted to throw that in since we were talking about her anyway.
It is one thing worth again mentioning is, I don't think you hear too much of this stuff anymore, but I think you've, in all your years of comic reading, you've probably heard it. I know I've heard it about, you've heard certain writers say, oh, were there any stories left to tell about Superman? Haven't we done them all? Like, what is there to do? You know what I mean? And you think about the endless variations of the Smurfs, right? Like, how many stories can you tell? And yet these people have been cranking Smurf stories out for 60 years now. You're like, well, I guess there are endless variations of this thing. Of the I mean, like, except for a couple of them, like Papa Smurf or Jokey, like, they don't have a lot of personality, right? They're all just kind of these sort of
Yeah,
faceless
they kind
blue,
of have their own,
formless blue guys.
a lot of them have sort of their own, like, I guess they have their own purpose. Like, one is a carpenter, one is a chef, one is a,
No, they
whatever.
live in a communist collective. That's established.
They basically do. Yeah, but there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah, you're right. I mean, I guess Hefty, the one, the strong guy, has like a heart tattoo on his shoulder. So he's, and then Brainy has the glasses. So a couple of them you can kind of tell. And those are the ones they use a lot because visually they have a tell. You can kind of tell them apart a little bit. But yeah, I mean, 90% of them all are just, have pants and a hat. That's about it.
Exactly. The
And a
Fijian,
little tail sticking out.
Caps that we
Yes,
established
the
earlier.
Fijian cap. Sorry, forgot about that. And I guess the Phoebe pajama pants. I don't know exactly what you call that, but so they're all kind of they all pretty much look alike, and like, so I think they're more defined by their purpose, I guess, more or less, like what they do in the Smurf village, as opposed to any kind of personality. I guess Jokey. Remember
There's
Jokey? He has the
Jokey,
one. He always
there's
has the
Jokey.
present that blows up in your face.
Yeah,
So yeah,
it's
him.
they kind of, I haven't bothered to do it, but there really probably is a series of one-to-ones to be made between the Smurfs and the Fire and Water Podcast Network. But well, that's something we'll get
Wow,
into at
I should.
another
You know
time.
what? Yeah, I really should have thought of that ahead of time. But maybe that's something for the comment section. By 100%, that's something for the comment section.
Who is Jokey Smurf in the Fire and Water Podcast Network? It's not just quite.
Who
So,
is no,
okay.
it's not.
So he's not listening. It's fine.
No,
So,
he's not.
all right. So the second story is called, which right up the rally because it's sports related, Brett, Smurf
Yeah.
Ball, where the
Yep.
Smurfs play this game. Gargamel gets hit in the head and he forgets who he is. And of course, that's going to work out for them because he's always trying to murder them. So at least for
Yeah.
this one, he's not.
Maybe that's the whole thing with Gargamel. Maybe he has CTE.
He's
Maybe
got a
that's why he's
traumatic
so
brain
messed
injury
up.
or
Yeah,
something.
from this. Yeah, he's definitely in concussion protocol after this. But they're having fun. They're having fun just smacking the ball. Well, Hefty. I think it's Hefty, isn't it? I believe it's Hefty. That's funny. He's so strong that he keeps not. Nobody wants to play with him. So he keeps. He's the one. He is punching the ball, and it sort of has that. It's like a tether ball almost, or like I guess for their size it could actually just be one of those paddle ball things. Yeah, the paddle
Yeah,
ball
right,
you
'cause they're
spin the
tiny.
ring with the red ball. Yeah, so you have that, and he eventually, yeah, he hits it so hard it goes off the string and knocks out Gargamel
Who
because
counts?
I yeah and he once again forgets what he's supposed to be doing. So
I won't ruin it for the rest of you in case you want to watch it. I won't
Yeah,
get
spoiler
into, we
alert.
won't do any
If anybody
spoilers in
wants
the
to,
ending.
yeah.
There's Monster Smurf, which is a story where Papa Smurf is, of course, experimenting, and he ends up turning a bunch of the Smurfs into kind of vaguely monster kind of guys after, like they go through this cloud and they come out and they've got fangs and stuff like that. Probably about as if probably would have scared young Chris Franklin as a
Yeah,
boy,
absolutely. Chris
but.
probably has this. I guarantee he has this. He probably got it. He
That's
has a
the
pristine condition of this. You should ask him.
I should have asked Chris whether he has this and it's in mint
Yeah.
condition. It's like
Yeah,
floating in
probably.
a it's been slab. Paul probably has a slabbed edition of it. We'll have
Yeah,
to
that's true. That's true. So
ask
he's selling it for $60 on eBay.
That's right. Yeah, one of the eBay sellers was P. Kien. I didn't put that together. So So, and then you mentioned there is a lot of interstitial stuff. There is a lot of like one page gag things. And like I said, I'm guessing the way, this stuff is produced is that Marvel just got sent a ton of material and they just had somebody in the bullpen just sort of put it all together. And also on top of the pages are little text gags where they just use the word Smurf in all various nice work. If you can Smurf it, things like that. Just,
It's a lot of and somebody really liked the standards, because there's definitely a lot of there's a lot of play on words with like Sinatra songs and things
yeah,
like that. Yeah,
kids love
absolutely.
Frank Sinatra, you know,
Of
we all
course
know
they do.
that.
Of course
So
they
there's
do.
that.
They're all
So
the 8-year-olds are like, oh, I get it.
yeah. References. So there's also what's the there's Sticky Smurf. That's a story here. which is involves this sort of chemical that Papa Smurf creates and it gets all over Gargamel and it leaves him in a quite an advantageous way at the end there because he's all covered in all this goo that he's trying to get over. That's
But
again.
Papa Smurf, being the cool guy he is, did leave him the I guess it's not a recipe, but like the formula to have the solvent so he can get out of it though, because he was stuck with one of the Smurfs and he got his Smurf out, but he didn't so he didn't completely Smurf him over on this.
That's right.
Yeah.
And there's the Smurfs and the Evil Bird, where again Gargamel is working on his own formula, and that turns him into an evil crow, so he can go spy on the Smurfs. And then he bonks his head, and the Smurfs end up taking care of him because the Smurfs are nice, right? And that, and then he feels a little guilty about that, not too guilty, but he ends up feeling bad about that because the Smurfs are nice to him because they're a nice bunch of blue people, and he shouldn't be doing this to them.
It does get a little dark. I mean, he tries to smoke out Papa Smurf out of his own house. He like stuffs a pillow down his smokestack and I guess Papa Smurf had a fire going in his in his toad. What are they? They're not toadstools. What are they? They're like mushrooms. This one got a little dark, but and then I guess it wears off and he turns back into Gargamel, like you said. He bonks his head again at the end too. So it's a lot of head injuries for Gargamel in this.
Definitely a staple of old-timey storytelling was getting hit in the head and something happened. It was a lot of traumatic brain injuries. The Smurf plane story, where one of the Smurfs gets a plane and he goes and he takes off and hijinks ensue. The opening splash panel where the Smurf is in this plane and we see Gargamel kind of like looking perturbed. That is the cover to one of the regular size Smurf books that Marvel published a year earlier. So that's again, they showing you like how little like effort they were not. I don't mean that in a bad way, but like that's how kind of. That's what they weren't even bothering to commission new covers. Like it was just take a panel, blow it up. That's the cover. You're just cranking these things out. So,
Smurfette's that's pretty impressed with this guy too, the Smurf who creates the but like you said, they don't use a lot of their names, because even at the end I think she just calls him Smurf. She said like, oh Smurf, you are wonderful, as they fly off. That's the Howard Chaykin one. That's the one he drew. But yeah, it's like, so I always try to figure out how big is the forest that they live in, because Gargamel can never find this the Smurf village. That's always the big thing, is he can't, they stay hidden from him. He can never find it. So I'm imagining it's got to be pretty big, right? It's got to
You would
be
think,
a
right?
massive forest.
You would.
And is this now, is it supposed to be just, it's supposed to be just a long time ago, right? It's supposed to be on Earth. Yes.
I,
This is
as
just
much
like
as
a
I've
long
ever
time
thought about
ago.
this, yes,
Yeah,
I would
I guess I
presumably.
never really thought about that much either. But I assume it's a lot, because, Gargamel's a human and everything. So I assume it's just a long time ago. Maybe somebody knows. I don't know. I'm just assuming this is like, maybe like the Middle Ages, I would assume, just kind of like the way Gargamel's dressed. and everything and the way
I guess,
his
right. I guess
voice
so. I mean, it
looks.
could be one of those little
So,
tiny worlds like the Atom when he remember when the Atom in the
oh
Sword of the
yeah,
Atom
that's
ended up
true.
to that, he went to that
Well,
kind of like not subatomic, but tiny
right,
little world and they all lived
that's
in the
true.
jungle and those guys were just like Conan the Barbarian and stuff. So you
Yeah,
never know.
see, that'd be a good issue if the Atom came in with his sword
Yeah,
kind of thing
he's
and
riding a frog
carving
and
up
hacking away at Gargamel, whatever. Yeah.
Smurfs
So by the way, on the final page, which is just a one page gag,
something.
the little joke at the top is it says, "Sometimes in winter, I gaze into the Smurfs," which is quite existential, really. Like, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They got some deep stuff here.
Yeah. It works better if you read it in the voice of Werner Herzog, right? That's how it would
Okay.
work.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
And so the back cover is just the Smurfs partying, just everybody having a big party. They're all dancing around a fire and, I mean, well, okay, now hold on. Now I'm gonna counteract what you just said. You said this is the Middle Ages, but there's a plane in this. They invented a plane.
Well,
So it's got to
I
be
guess that's
post the
true.
Wright brothers, right? Or
Yeah,
are they
maybe it
alleging that the
is.
Smurfs invented planes? Is that what they're talking about?
Maybe they did. That's true. Maybe they did do that. We
I don't
don't
know.
know.
We don't
We don't
know.
know.
We just
I always
don't
thought,
know.
so here's, I do actually know another sort of a part of a Smurf fact
Awesome.
is Peyo, I guess, I think it's pronounced Peyo, right?
I assumed it's Peo, yes.
Okay. He created this, so the Smurfs are technically a spin-off. He created like a Middle Ages storyline, and I'm sorry, I can't remember what it's called, but it was two characters. I think it was like a knight and a squire type thing, and the Smurfs were characters in that they encountered, and the Smurfs helped them with something with like some mission or something like that, and then they became kind of popular, and he started doing adventures with them, and then they kind of, so it's kind of like the Jeffersons, basically, it's
Yes,
sort of like the
yes.
Jefferson. So, and that was in the middle of that. I guess that's why I
That's
was
true. That
thinking
was set in the
earlier.
Middle Ages. It says here, Johann and Peewit, as you
Yes,
translated
yes,
into
yes.
English. And that was set in the Middle Ages. So,
Yeah,
okay.
yeah,
All
yeah,
right. Well,
yeah.
there you go.
And if you look at the I guess Peewit is the smaller character. His facial structure looks a lot like a Smurf too. Like he's
Okay.
kind of got the oval face and the nose and everything like that. So he kind of you can see where that like kind of look came from. So,
Yes. Okay.
but
That makes sense.
yeah. But you were mentioning before, like in the beginning, where you said how the Peyo used other people obviously to draw this stuff because he can't draw everything. The designs of the Smurfs are pretty mimicable. I don't even know if that's a word, but pretty easy to mimic. We had, like I was mentioning, my mom worked at WJAL. Their art director there drew a lot of like children's books, and he had a comic strip that was in the local paper and stuff like that too.
Wow.
So he did a lot of that, and he did a lot of stuff with Smurfs. And this is back when you could kind of draw that stuff and sell it, and you didn't have to worry about Hanna-Barbera coming after you or
The
something
long
like
arm
that.
of the law.
Yeah, exactly like that. So he did those a lot, and he's kind of showed he's a really nice man. He was really, really good guy. And he kind of showed me how to draw them. So they're pretty actually kind of easy to draw. Like they're a lot of sort of ovals and quick lines, and they so their design is pretty easy to create, and it's fluid, and there's a lot of like kind of motion to them because you have sort of the hat going one direction and the nose and then the ears cutting back and stuff like that. So there's a lot there that makes them look alive. It makes them look sort of animated or fun or just interesting to look at.
Yeah, I mean, they said there's a reason why they've lasted 60 years at this point.
Yeah,
They do
absolutely.
have some sort of visual appeal, obviously, to small kids, and they're just sort of fascinating. I mean, like I said, as a 60-page Smurf comic book goes, treasure size comic, it goes, it's a fairly nice package, right? If this is if your
Yeah,
kid loves
absolutely.
Smurfs, then you want to have them read for a little bit. This is not bad,
Yeah,
for what it is.
I agree.
It's just a weird little ignominious ending to the vaunted Marvel Treasury format to
Yeah.
end with this, but
Yeah, I
you
had
know.
no idea this was sort of the last hurrah before I guess before the 2000s. That's well, what are you gonna do?
I mean, I have always made the supposition. There's no, I don't have any evidence to back this up. It's not going to stop me. Is that it was the fact that the, 83 comics were moving more and more from newsstand distribution to comic stores, and that became the purview of dedicated nerds like ourselves, and they wanted their books in pristine condition, and the treasuries could never be kept that way because of their giant size. And so it's the kind of thing where they were like, well, I don't want, well, why do I want this when I could just get it in regular size and I could put it in a bag and keep it in mint condition forever, kind of thing. So it was just sort of a pincer movement of like, just as more fans came in, this format is just kind of like, what? This is not, treasuries are meant to be read, not collected and hoarded. And that is not what, now we're luckily we're kind of going back the other way, thank goodness, but nevertheless. But yeah,
What do
so
you
this,
attribute that to?
what?
Just the return of them. Like, is
Oh,
it
I think
just?
it's just pure nostalgia. It's
Yeah.
just
Okay.
total. I mean, that's what all the facsimile business is about, is
Yeah,
just,
well, that definitely,
And so yeah, I think that's just totally what it is. And I'm here for it. I'm here for that, I mean,
No,
it's good,
absolutely. I've gotten a couple of them purely for my 9-year-old, because and just because I was just like, this is something big that he can just. I just got him the recently the facsimile of the Superman, the Spider-Man versus or Superman versus Spider-Man one, just so he could kind of lay out on the carpet and read it, because he loves, he gets the graphic novels and he gets the stuff. So he gets the small books. I was like, I wanted something big that he could kind of just stretch out. Because I still have a bunch of my treasuries, but they're, a lot of them are kind of beat up at
Oh,
this
sure.
point.
Yeah. I mean, they're
And
50 years
if I
old at
let
this
them
point.
go, yeah, and if I let them go at it, there's going to be nothing left of them. So I was just like, well, if I can get a couple of these facsimile ones, and the new one, I got that new Superman one that came out last year. So yeah, it's cool. I like it more for him. I just kind of buy them. I'm like, okay, I'm not that I can really find a way to keep these in pristine shape anyway. But I'm like, I just want him to enjoy him.
Did
I'll read him
he
and then he
he
can.
enjoy
Oh
the
yeah. Yeah. He really liked the Superman Spider-Man one.
That's great. That's
Because
fantastic.
he knows his characters. And he would ask me questions, or he'd be like, look at this, or stuff like that. And it's something I could give him, in the car and stuff like that. I take him to the comic. It's basically the only reason I still have a subscription. Most of the stuff I read is online at this point. I have the Marvel app, I have the DC app. There's a couple titles that I've held on to physically that I still collect every month, the Superman and Action and Batman and the Avengers for some reason. I still don't know why. And one or two, I think Nightwing and like one or two others. But and the main reason I feel like it is one, I want to support comic stores, if I can. And two, it's like I like taking him because it's cool. He likes going, a lot of times I would get, they have a spinner rack in the front
Oh,
where
that's
they have a
great.
lot of the, they have two spinner racks, actually. One, they keep the facsimiles on.
That's great. That's great. What's the name of this store? Let's give
Oh,
them a shout out.
I
What's the name of
should.
this
It's
store?
called Big Planet Comics. They actually have like three locations in the DC area. The one I go to is in Vienna, Virginia. And they also have one, I think they have one in Bethesda. I think that one's still there. And they have one in, the one in DC might have closed, but I think they still have the one in Bethesda and the one in Vienna is like their sort of main one. But good people. I've been going there a long, long time. And it's like 25 minutes away. There are closer ones, but I'm like, I just always supported them.
Oh,
But
that's
yeah,
great.
and then they have another spinner rack that they have. The Batman and Scooby-Doo adventures, and they have like some of the old like superpowers that like the third time around for these that are for directly for kids. They have certain titles and stuff like that, and then they'll have stuff like Sonic the Hedgehog and stuff like that. And a lot of times he'd get one from there, or they have the Tiny Titan, stuff like that. And now He's reading, his reading's getting a little more sophisticated. So now he's going more for sort of the graphic novels, the thicker ones that are for kids still, but they have a little more, meat on the bone, stuff like that. So
That's great. It's fantastic when you find a comic store that really knows kind of how to like merchandise, like how to stock stuff that makes it palatable for the customers,
I
that's
was gonna
great.
yeah, I was gonna say it's probably if you went to this comic store, you'd be stunned because it's not filled with like Funko Pops and action figures and everything. They have almost none of that, actually. They have very little. But they have a very loyal following, and they do a great job with it, and they take care of their customers. So yeah, Big Planet Comics in Vienna, Virginia, if anybody's ever
Excellent.
there.
Excellent.
Yeah,
Excellent.
highly
Excellent. So,
recommend.
well, Brett, we've been talking about Smurfs for 46 minutes. So, I think we've done
That's blown by,
I
hasn't
think I think we've I think we've done our bit
it?
in terms of the attention that this book requires. Again, I would not want I did I knew that when we planned to do this, we were going to have fun, but it was never my intention to be snide about it because it's ridiculous. This is meant for little kids. That's
Yeah,
great.
no,
It's
yeah,
wonderful.
absolutely.
I wished that Marvel had maybe decided to keep. I mean, Marvel's been doing licensed comics forever. I wish they had continued to do the. If they had said, look, we're not going to sell the treasuries in comic stores because the collector nerds don't want them, but we're going to keep putting them in department stores. They could have done that forever, right? They could have just said, okay, all the licensed characters, that's what we're going to put in the treasuries. They could have done st more Star Wars treasuries, more Rom the Space Knight was still one of them. But they had dropped Battlestar Galactica by that point and Tarzan. But nevertheless, I wish they had just said, you know what? If we can get our hands on some licensed material for cheap, we could put it as a treasury and put it in a department store, and maybe we'll make a couple of bucks. I wish they just kept doing that. Would have been great.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree. Or even like, if the treasure's too much, like just magazine size, something like that,
Yeah.
just
I mean, they
something
had that
to throw out
Starline,
there.
in the 80s. They could have done Royal Roy, everybody. That would have been good.
What, who?
Royal Roy, their version of. Well, it's on the download. Their version of Richie Rich. It was Royal Roy. Look it up.
Royal
It's a real
Roy.
thing.
I'll
It's a
have
real
to
thing.
look at
Unlike
that.
Richie Rich, he didn't have 75 titles in
Oh,
any
he
given
did.
month. They just had the one. But I'm just saying, Marvel kept trying. They did Thundercats. They did Masters of the Universe. Like, that would have been fun to try and. Because I remember buying comics in the newsstand at comic shops. And I remembered, like, the Star Line. And I was thinking, well, who's going to buy these? Because little kids aren't coming into comic stores and adults aren't going to buy these. Well, get them where kids are. So, they could have done all
Exactly.
that. So
They're doing more of that, and that is coming back a little
it
bit.
is coming
I'm
back.
seeing
Yes.
that more in grocery stores. I'm seeing that actually, believe it or not, I was at speaking of Lancaster, Pennsylvania. We went up to see my mom a couple weeks ago, and I stopped into a Turkey Hill, which is basically their 7-Eleven,
7-Eleven, yeah.
but much better than 7-Eleven.
Brett,
But
you did not just say that.
Turkey Hill. Ask anybody who's been in a Turkey Hill; they're way better than
I've
7-Eleven.
never been in a Turkey Hill, but it is not better than 7-Eleven.
Well, maybe you'll think so now. In the front area, when I walked in, they had a stand, one of those sort of not a spinner rack, but one of the stands, like sort of one of the cardboard
Yeah, the
ones
cardboard displays, yeah.
that has the tier things. And they had a bunch of DC comics just individually wrapped for
Yep.
like $2.99 or
Yep.
something
Yep.
like that each. And they're all kind of in the like kind of like just post New 52, kind of the rebirth era time. So maybe like, I don't know, like 20, 2015, 20, the maybe 2018, like right around that time. A lot of like Superman, some Justice League, some Batman. I grabbed just because I was like so amazed, but I grabbed a Batman and a Batman and Scooby-Doo Adventures for my kid, just because I wanted to just support it. I wanted
Yes,
to be, this is so
yes.
awesome. But yeah, I saw this in Target. I was like, this is so cool. And I'm seeing that more at grocery stores,
Yep.
and just various things they have. I saw one the other day at the Giant. It was just like a It was like a, I want to say it was magazine size, but it just had like It was a Superman, and it had just like three different Superman stories in there from different eras and stuff like that. And it's just like, wow, this is so cool. It's great. And it's, again, it's something, when you're checking out the grocery line, you just grab for your kid, or if your kid's with you, he sees it, and he wants to get it, something like that, or get it for yourself or whatever. So it's great. I love seeing that stuff come back.
Yeah, I saw the same exact thing at the down here we have Circle K,
Oh
which
yeah, no.
is, and
Strange
they
things are afoot. Yeah.
yeah, it was the same thing. It was this cardboard display with these bagged DC comics. I'm like, this is great.
Yeah.
This is fantastic. Comics used to be part of the greater culture,
Yeah.
pop culture of the world, let alone America, and then they got, siphoned off. And now they're slowly creeping back. So I
Yeah.
love it. It's great. I mean,
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry, go ahead.
the treasuries will never make it in because of the price point.
Yeah,
Because they,
yeah.
like you looking to drop a couple of bucks to buy your kid a comic, is not going to spend $14.99 to buy them the reprint of Untold Legend of the Batman. But
No,
nevertheless,
no.
but I do wonder, could you do this again? Could you try and license some stuff on the cheap and get it back? I don't know. It's possible.
Yeah, on the cheap, sort of the key word. It's just like, but like I said, stuff like it. Smurfs probably isn't on the cheap anymore, just because of their, they've kind of maintained that popularity and have a bit of a surge lately. But yeah, I could be completely off base. I still attribute this kind of resurgence in having comics different places with sort of almost the reintroduction that Superman is cool. And I feel like a lot of this stuff is back because Superman is kind of cool again, and people and he's for such a long time, for like 20 years or so, Batman has been the more prominent,
Oh,
maybe longer
yeah.
than that, maybe
Oh, yeah.
30 years, has been the prominent guy. DC, he probably still is, but Superman has gotten this resurgence and the movie and everything, and I feel like that sort of brings out, instead of it being all edgelords and everything else, now it's like, hey, it's okay for your kids to get these comics again, which is opening that back up. Because and I really, I could be completely wrong, but that's sort of the feeling I get.
It's great
And
to see. Yeah, it's
yeah, I
genuinely great
agree.
to see.
I agree.
Well,
Because
again,
things are so great nowadays. You know,
yes, luckily everything else in
I'm
the
three
world is humming
miles from the
along,
capital.
so
Yeah. Yeah,
it's
I'm
all
three
good.
miles from the capital of the United States, and things are just swimmingly, going swimmingly.
Things are
Couldn't be better.
smurf-tastic.
Yeah, they really are smurfy. Nothing smurfed up around here,
No,
though.
not at all. Well, oh boy. So, Brett, thank you for doing this. I really
Yeah.
appreciate it. I'm sorry you had to wade through those horrible scans that I sent you,
Nah, it was fine. It was fine.
again, this was something I really always did want to get to, and so I'm
Yeah.
glad that we finally got a chance to talk about it because it is significant in the history of the Treasury format. So, why don't you tell people where they can find you on this very network?
Yeah, well, I am on this very network. I have a show called The Fantastic Poor, where we talk about occasionally Smurfs, I guess. We could do a Smurf episode.
You
You know, if anybody
could,
wants a
sure.
blue, who wants to do a blue cocktail, could grab some blue
There you
curacao.
go.
Anyway, no, it's it, we talk cocktails and comics and have nice conversations. It's usually we have a featured cocktail or mocktail. I like to, we're all inclusive here at the Fantastic Lounge, and we discuss a particular comic book character and discuss a particular comic that they were in. And I have a different guest every episode to do that. It comes out every month, usually the last Wednesday of the month or close to it. We're actually recording this on the day that an episode just came out with Dr. Inge. So we talked about the Legion of Superheroes, the 5YL, which is Rob's favorite, and we did a fireball shooter. So that was kind of fun. So, but yeah, it's called Fantastic Pour. Please check it out. Again, you don't have to be a drinker to enjoy it. That's only one aspect of it. And I always provide a mocktail recipe on the gallery post if appropriate. So. That's where you can find me, and I'm on Blue Sky, and I'm on Instagram at Imagine8 Design.
As I said in the comments to this episode that you just mentioned, I did not think I'd be able to sit through a 2-hour podcast about the 5YL era of the Legion
Right.
and with some sports sprinkled in.
Yeah, yeah.
That just sounds like torture. And yet I thoroughly enjoyed the episode. So that's hats off, Fijian caps
Thank you.
off to you and Dr.
Thank you
Ange
so much.
for making that episode as entertaining as it was, given the subject matter sets my teeth on fire.
Well, I certainly understand. I doffed my Fijian cap back to you, good sir.
All right, excellent.
So,
Well,
yeah.
yeah, again, thank you all for sitting through this
Yep.
hour-long
Did we
discussion of the
make it an
Scorched
hour? Did we
Treasury.
drag this out for
We
an
almost
hour?
hit an hour. We're almost hitting
Oh,
the post, as
yes.
they say in the radio biz. But the show's
There
not over yet. We're going to run some podcast promos, and when I
you
come
go.
back, I'm going to do some listener feedback.
Smurfy. Hello there. Come on in and welcome to the Fantastic Four. I am your host, Brett Young, and this is the podcast serving up comics, cocktails, and conversation for your listening pleasure. Every episode, I'll welcome a guest to the Fantastic Lounge to explore one of their favorite comic book characters and cover a classic story in which they're featured. And what pairs better with great literature than a delicious drink? Based on my guest's ingredient of choice, we'll mix up a cocktail or mocktail to enjoy in the Fantastic Lounge while we talk comics, mixology, history, and whatever else comes to mind. So join me every month for the Fantastic Pour, open for business by the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
Maybe I can do a podcast about comic books. No, everybody does a podcast about comic books. Maybe I could do a podcast about TV shows. Now, there's a lot of podcasts out there covering TV shows. I know a podcast about movies. It's too general. A lot of people do podcasts about movies. Star Wars movies. No, everybody talks about Star Wars movies. I need to do a podcast that covers movies and television shows and comics and all the pop culture I loved growing up. Wait a minute. The Pop Culture Basement Podcast, hosted by me, Mike Jamison, covering all of the pop culture that I consumed and that we consumed during our formative years. Now available on all reputable podcast platforms. Join us down in the basement.
And we're back with listener feedback, and these are the comments we got on the last episode of Treasury Cast, which discussed Marvel Treasury Edition number 17 about the Incredible Hulk, where the guest was just me. The first up is Chad, who says, always been a welcome noise to my ears when a new Treasury Cast drops, Rob. So it was quite a treat to see your post on Blue Sky this morning about the Hulk episode. Plus, you gave me a good excuse to stay in my warm bed an extra 33 minutes on this cold winter day. As for how I file the new Treasuries, we are seeing hit the shelves. I keep them separate from the original versions. I think they look nicer on the shelf that way, with the vintage printings on one side and the newer, more robust versions on the other. Sounds like we were of a similar mind there. Keep up the good work, and I am looking forward to more of these irregular Treasury Guest episodes as you continue on past 100. Yes, and I guess you could argue this episode is especially irregular, so thank you, Chad. Ano Bosnar says, wow, always a great day when I see a new episode of Treasury Cast drop. It's nice to know that there will be periodic new episodes in the future. It's unfortunate that you couldn't work out participation with the guest, but I'm still glad you went forward with the show regardless, because I especially love the episodes that cover the classic 70s-80s Treasuries that from DC and Marvel. That whole period of comics is sort of my happy place. Otherwise, agree about Severn's inks over Trimpey's pencils. Those are by far the best-looking issues of the Hulk from that period, although in my book, nothing beats the material done by our pal, Sal, in the 1980s. Yeah, Sal Buscema did some absolutely amazing work on the book. He didn't really get a lot of his work printed in the Treasury format, if I remember. I think he kind of, you know, like he kind of became bigger in the 80s and the Treasuries were over by then, as we discussed ad nauseum in the opening segment. But it's too bad because the work was great stuff. Professor Chuck Coletta says, what a delight to find a new Treasury Cast episode waiting for me on my phone. I am disgustingly available to be a guest on any of the famous first editions of DC, as I believe I have them all. I am currently collecting all the hardcover Prince Valiant books, 37 through 96. And while they aren't officially Treasuries, I do love diving into an oversized format with gorgeous artwork. On a completely separate note, Rob, are you perchance reading the current ongoing Aquaman comic book series? It's one of the few DC books I've stuck with, and wonder what you think about how Arthur Mira and the company are being handled. The answer to that is no. I actually am not reading any comic books on the regular, Chuck. Every so often we think about dipping back into Aquaman, just kind of checking in with my old pal to see what's going on in that universe, but I have not done it yet. But never say never. Mitch says, coincidentally, I recently happened to purchase a copy of Marvel Treasure Edition number 17 for a reasonable price, maybe because it wasn't in the best condition, which is fine by me if it's reasonable, if it's readable. And this gave me a reason to read it before listening. As a fan of the Bill Bixby TV show, I couldn't help but notice that on page 8 of the Frenzy of the Counter-Earth story, Thunderbolt Ross has a shouting match with a reporter named Jason Anders. Anders looks a lot like Jack Colvin, who played Jack McGee, a tabloid reporter who was Banner's nemesis in the TV show. It was almost as if Banner's comic book nemesis, General Ross, had a run-in with Banner's TV nemesis, McGee. The resemblance to the Jack McGee character is just an amusing coincidence. It's Incredible Hulk 158, which is where the story originally appeared, was published in 72, 5 years before the TV show debuted. That's a great catch. I did not notice that. It's funny to me when you mention it that Marvel never did a Incredible Hulk comic book in the show continuity, maybe because he didn't take on any villains. They maybe thought visually there wasn't much there. But I don't know. I think you probably could have again made a couple of bucks by expressly doing a Hulk tie-in comic book. Maybe that's something they'll do the way DC did the Superman 78 and Batman 89. Rob McCarthy says, finally big enough group to ask the big question. One, why were both companies so high on sort of kind of heaps? 1A, why didn't they just bring back the heap? He was in the one panel of the Kree-Skull War. Two, how come none of these heap fans love the purple zombie? I don't know what that means. And three, I love Glenn Talbot. He's a major in the Army. He looks like Clark Gable, but he's such a jerk. The guy who turns into the Hulk is a better idea. I think it's because he's just so – Glenn Talbot's just so dull, Rob. I think that's really the idea there. They didn't bring back the heap because some company owned the heap. It was cheaper to just make your own Swamp Thing, Man Thing, or whatever. So I think that's the idea there. James Williams says, it is great to have a new episode of Treasury Cast. This has always been one of my favorite podcasts because where else can I listen to episodes about Dick Tracy, the Flintstones, the Wizard of Oz, or Little Orphan Annie? The variety makes this show so unique. Well, then you're going to love this episode, James. I really enjoyed this one because my favorite Hulk is The Wandering Hulk by Roy Thomas and Herb Trimpe. I have a request. I'm a massive fan of Hanna-Barbera. My favorite episode of Treasury Cast is the Flintstones Christmas Party, where Chris kept doing the wonderful voices of the characters. You covered Flintstones and Laugh Olympics. Is there any chance of you covering the other Marvel Hanna-Barbera Treasury Edition, Yogi Bear's Easter Parade? Yes. There's no plans at the moment, but yes, James. It's part of the Treasury collection, and we'll maybe get to it at some point. It's sitting here on my shelf. Unlike the Smurfs, it was not damaged in that flood, so yeah, maybe someday. Captain Entropy says, Rob, I love that Treasury Guest is back, even if only for a visit. I look forward to more visits like this in the future, guest or no guest. Like Mitch, I picked up this Treasury recently. See, there's this podcast that influenced me to start buying old Treasuries at comic book conventions. Come to think of it, it was podcasters that started me going to more conventions too. This is some racket. Anyway, I agree with you that on these stories, and especially the Trimpy and Severin art, I always thought that Havoc's costume was neat because they color it truly black, not highlighted like Black Panthers and others. Polaris looked great too, and Talbot was attempting to comfort Betty and not be a jerk for once. Anyway, this was great. Thanks again for bringing Treasury Cast back. Thank you very much, my friend. Martin Gray says, thanks for gifting us another new episode, Rob. It's a shame about the guest being unable to take part. You handle things wonderfully, though. Thank you, Martin. I've never seen these stories in color, just black and white, and UK reprint title, The Mighty World of Marvel. They look great. I may have to grab this one. The covers are really great. Oddly, the GCD disagrees with Mike's Amazing World, crediting front and back pencils to one Jeff Acklin. The back cover original art can be found online with an Acklin attribution. Everyone agrees Tony DiZuniga inked. I'm not familiar with Jeff Acklin, so I never would have thought that. Thank you for the detail, Martin. Bradley Glenn says, hi, Rob. What an unexpected treat, the sporadic return of Treasury Cast. Your description of the page with the Hulk attacking the side of the Mammoth Cliff made me look at the gallery pages. Yep, it's impressive. I hope someone contacts you who enthusiastically wishes to discuss a Marvel Treasury with you. You didn't list 2001, A Space Odyssey. It's a personal favorite. Have a nice day. Thank you, Bradley. Yes, people have reached out to me, and we will get to that one at some point. James Williams comes back and he says, I'm listening to Michael Bailey and Andy Leon talk about the Superman versus Amazing Spider-Man trilogy. They mentioned something I completely forgotten. The first time Marvel and DC teamed up was when they jointly produced A Wizard of Oz Treasury. Have you covered that volume on Treasury Cast? No, we have not gotten to that one. We did do the Return to Oz, or The Land of Oz, excuse me. I did that with my pal Tim Price, but we just never quite got around to the original Wizard of Oz. Again, that's another one that will be gotten to at some point because it is historic in both DC and Marvel's publishing history and the Treasury format. Gothos Mansion says, glad to hear a new episode of Treasury Cast. The show led to my discovery of the Fire and Water Network. I came across it while looking at Treasury stuff on the internet. Now, whenever you see, I've commented to think, well, crap, there he is again. You know you can blame Treasury Cast. I got this Hulk Treasury brand new off the shelf at my local Harco Drugs. It was a great read at the time. Okay, it still is. I was disappointed when a few of the stories showed up again in the Marvel Superheroes not long afterwards. Did the Spider-Man Treasury start featuring material from Marvel Team-Up so they wouldn't rerun stories like they were in Marvel Tales? I have Incredible Hulk 150 and love the cover. However, the page of Hulk lifting the mountain isn't as impressive at regular size as it is at Treasury size, of course. Since you asked, I store my facsimiles with whatever title they are from. I store all my treasuries together, either original or facsimile. If you got this Hulk Treasury on vacation, it must have been left out on the shelf past its sell-by date. The first four comics I bought have on-sale dates of September, October, 78. I got my copy of JLA LCE C46 Treasury, which went on sale in May, sometime after September. Some stores in my area didn't return their copies. Marvel Treasury Edition 14 with Spider-Man was my first Treasury. My next one was the Batman of Ra's al Ghul. Yes, because these books did not have cover dates on them, they sat on the shelf a lot longer, which gave the vendors a longer chance to make money from them, which I think is actually quite a good idea. So, yeah, a lot of the treasuries that I found were sitting on the shelf long after they were initially published. Andrew Leyland says, this was just as much a pleasant surprise as the last one. Thank you, Andy. Dallin Baumgarten says, what a pleasant surprise to find a new Treasury Cast episode. You do care about us, Rob. You do care. So for no particular reason, and 100% coincidentally, I just happen to have 37 specific opinions and observations about this Treasury issue written in my notes on my phone. So here goes. Wait, never mind. To quote Inigo Montoya, let me explain. No, there is too much. Let me sum up. I did want to say that I recently collected and started reading Marvel's Savage Tales magazine. No, not that Savage Tales, but the Savage Tales magazine Marvel put out in 85 and 86 that only lasted 8 issues. It's an incredibly diverse black and white anthology series with some top-tier creators, and I swear it's relevant, just bear with me. It's the magazine where Doug Murray and Michael Golden's NAMM debuted. Several issues also feature Herb Trimpe's Sky Warrior stories, and there were several John Severin-drawn Western stories scattered throughout that have been quickly become some of my all-time favorite work of his. You can find these issues cheap, and they are well worth picking up. I believe it was Neil Young who was saying, hey, 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 my, Treasury Cast will never die. Thank you, Dallin. It is a coincidence you just happen to have notes on that Hulk Treasury. Yes, co-signed to Savage Tales. I picked that magazine up when I could sneak it into the house, which was difficult because they had quite lurid covers. But yeah, there was some really, really great stuff in there. And I think it's been collected recently. I thought I saw Larry Hama talk about that on his Facebook page or something, which is great. Because again, there's some great stuff there. And you can find issues on the cheap because it was not highly collected at the time. And then finally, the guest from this very episode, Brett Young, says, welcome back, Treasury Cast. Always love a good Hulk Treasury. Wandering Emo Hulk is still my favorite Hulk. Also, does Herb Trimpe has more pages in a Treasury format than any other artist? It's got to be close. That's good observation, Brett. I'm not going to sit there and count them all, but probably so. So thank you all for the comments. I really appreciate you checking back in on the show, even though it is coming out somewhat irregularly. I promise to be doing a couple more across the years, and maybe it won't be so many months between episodes. And speaking of that, the big announcement that dropped just before I sat down to record this episode is, of course, DC is releasing after, well, let me back up. Let me sum up. After doing 3 treasuries in January, February, the 2 Superman, Spider-Mans, and then the Secret Origin, the supervillains, I thought DC was well on its way to doing a treasury facsimile every month because they were doing them every other month. And then they kind of doubled up at the end of the month. They kind of doubled up like October to December at the end of last year. And then they were doing Superman, Spider-Man, Superman versus Spider-Man, Superman and Spider-Man, basically in the course of 1 month, followed in February by Secret Origins of Super Villains. I thought, well, We're going to be doing these every month. And then nothing. No news. And we've been many months without them. And I got worried. Are they stopping? And now, of course, we have the news, the best of all possible newses for this fan, that my beloved Justice League of America number 200 is going to be reprinted as a Treasury book. When I wrote the article for 13th Dimension a couple of years ago, which were 13 treasuries that I want to see DC and Marvel publish. I think they were just DCs. JLA was at the top of my list. It's my all-time favorite comic book. As any of you have been listening to any of my shows for any length of time know. So it's just a dream come true. It's almost in a weird way. I can almost kind of relax now knowing that they've done my favorite book. So everyone they do after this will just sort of be gravy, because there won't be like, well, yeah, but they're doing Smurfs again, but they didn't do JLA 200. They're doing JLA 200. And I don't like to talk about what shows I haven't recorded yet. I'm superstitious that way, but I will. And there is just no way that we're not going to do an episode of Treasury Cast on the JLA 200 Treasury, because it comes out in July. I really wish it was coming out next week, because I just can't wait to get my hands on this thing. But I'm just so grateful to DC, whoever decided to do this great book in this format. Just could not be more excited. And as far as I understand, there will be more. This is not the only thing DC is going to do. Treasury fans have a lot to look forward to in the rest of the year. I think DC is going to be doing more and more of these books. I wish Marvel would get on the stick, but at least we have the DC one. So yeah, we will be doing an episode on JLA 200 Treasury for sure. So that is it. Thank you all for listening, for sitting through an hour of me and Brett wandering around talking about Smurfs. You can find all the back episodes of the show on our website, findwaterpodcast.com. You can find me over on Blue Sky under Rob Kelly Creative. And if you want to support the Findwater Podcast Network, please just go to patreon.com/FW podcast. So once again, big thanks to my pal and fellow network all-star Smurf Young for coming on the show to talk about this book. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back sooner rather than later. But until then, go big or go home.
What are all these Smurf phones for, Papa Smurf?
So our friends can call us at 1-900-909-2233 and hear an exciting Smurf adventure.
Do I dare tell how we sailed through the air?
How Brady saved you, Papa Smurf?
Of course. We'll have a new Smurf story every day. They'll also find out how to get a Smurf of their very own.
Wow!
And part of the cost of the call goes to Special Olympics. It costs $2.45 people money for a 2-minute call. So get your parents' permission, then call 1-900-909-2233.
Oh! Eric, you promised Smurf.